This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net.
Four people, one study, the internet access brain implant to bind or destroy them all. Now available in print and ebook from author R.R. Campbell and Nine Star Press, it's Imminent Dawn, the first book in the epic empathy sci-fi saga. Learn more about the book reviewers are calling freaking sci-fi Game of Thrones and an incisive techno-thriller that gets more tense with every page by visiting empathyseries.com. That's empathyseries.com. Thanks for listening. They say we must learn from history to avoid repeating it, and what better way is there to learn from history than to immerse oneself in it through storytelling? Historical fiction is one way to do this, but what if we as writers want to bend the rules and write characters and worlds that are more fiction than history, more fantasy than reality, but still have a grounding in historical fact? Hey there, I'm author, editor, and RightsCast Network founder R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 53 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network. This episode's guest is Glenn Quigley, a fellow Nine Star Press author who joined me to discuss all things historical fiction and fantasy. Glenn Quigley is the author of novels including The Moth and the Moon and The Lion Lies Waiting. He's also a graphic designer for themoodybear.com, and though he's originally from Dublin, he now lives in Lisburn, Northern Ireland. Aside from writing and designing, Glenn enjoys photography, drawing, and watercolor painting. All right, without additional delay, let's hop into my R.R. Campbell RightsCast interview of author Glenn Quigley. Stay tuned after our conversation for updates on future RightsCast Network programming, and thanks, as always, for listening. Well, Glenn, thank you very much for joining me on this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Ryan.
This will be really great. It's always nice to talk to other authors who are published with Nine Star Press, and you are one of those, of course. You write primarily historical fiction, and we'll have an opportunity to talk about that broadly today, as well as some of your titles more specifically. So before we, you know, to get the conversation really started, let's talk about your interest in historical fiction. What really piqued your interest in writing that? And have you written in other genres prior to writing in historical fiction?
When I decided that I was going to try and write a full-length novel, I wasn't entirely sure what the story. There was just no question. It was always going to be historical fiction for me. Although technically, I think it ended up being historical fantasy, but it was always going to be set in the past. Because I've always been drawn to just the aesthetics, really, more so than the modern world. I really like BBC history documentaries. I tend to watch every time they come on, whether I've seen them before or not. I'll just get lost in the past, and it'll just conjure ideas and stories for me.
So it sounds like you're kind of coming to writing in the world of historical fiction sort of as, whether you'd say it's an official or perhaps an unofficial student of history. And I'm curious, you know, you mentioned these BBC documentaries, you know that there was no question you were going to write in the past from the get-go. So why don't you tell listeners to this podcast, you know, what time period is your current series written in and what made you choose this time period?
They're set in the year 1780. I chose 1780 specifically because it was easier for me to work out the timeline and keep everybody's sort of ages and historical events, you know, in check. And it was also, I knew I wanted it to be either before or right at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. I did want it to, because I think once you get sort of steam engines and you get that whole sort of industry coming into a story, it tends to be quite modern. It's almost like the birth of the modern world, you're saying. So I like being sort of on the cusp of that, just on the edge of it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you mentioned, too, you know, talking about historical fiction versus historical fantasy. I wonder, too, if since you consider what you're writing to be sort of in the vein of historical fantasy, if you had written it in a sort of, you know, post-industrial revolution world, might it have started to come across almost as if it were steampunk or something like that, if you had the technology start to become a focus? I can certainly see how that would shift you away from the genre that you knew you wanted to write in from the first place. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, definitely. It would have just been full on steampunk. As it is, I think you could probably get away with calling what I've written very, very light clockpunk.
Oh, cool.
I do have there's a clockwork technology in the stories that never existed, purely because I wanted there to be a little extra layer to show that when you're reading the story, you're not reading about the past, you're reading about a possible past. And so every now and then, it's just sort of, it crops up and you kind of go, oh, that's right, you know, this didn't really happen, this isn't really the past, it's a little bit more fantastical than that, but it's not full on like steampunk level technology where it's just everywhere and it sort of it becomes the story. The clockwork technology is in the story, but it's never the focus.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting too, because, you know, as we continue to describe the and sort of, you know, pin down the genre in which you write, it's sounding to me almost as if we're taking, it's kind of falling under the broader umbrella category of something like speculative fiction. It just so happens that this speculative fiction is taking place in the past. There's mention of this clockwork technology, though it's not obviously the focus. It creates this sort of clockpunk, but we're not in the Industrial Revolution where we get steampunk. And I think it's really awesome to have an opportunity to explore this for listeners here, because I think there is probably a tendency, and I would say that I'm guilty of this myself, to just kind of lump all historical fiction into one category, but it sounds like there's a lot more nuance to it than might appear at first glance.
Yeah, definitely. And I'd say while it was fun to write, it is incredibly hard to list. But you know, when you're submitting things and you're trying to explain on websites or to people what genre it is, you're kind of going, well, it's a bit of this and a bit of that. You know, it's kind of hard to categorize, which is both, you know, a strength and a weakness, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think there has been a movement, and maybe it's just, you know, the folks that you and I are interacting with more in the writing community at large, but I think this might be a trend more broadly, is that we are seeing more genre bending or genre blending works. And I really like the opportunities that offers us, not only as writers, but readers as well, because it puts us in a position to tell stories that, though from the standpoint perhaps of underlying structure, they're similar to what's already out there, but on the surface, you know, where the story is really living and breathing, we get these really great chances to kind of be part of worlds and be part of stories that we might not have otherwise had the opportunity to visit as readers.
I think especially as a new writer, as I am, I had my first two books released last year. I think if I came to it sort of saying, okay, I'm going to write historical fiction, I think what I would personally, I think that would limit me. And I think, well, if it's this, then it has to be A, B, and C. You know, you cannot have D, E, whatever, you know, all of this other stuff inside it, because that is not historical fiction, that is something else. So I think if you're open to, you know, incorporating more elements, I think it creates a richer work that's a bit more true to your own voice.
Right. It kind of removes some of the restrictions that we might find if we were coming to the page as writers, you know, regardless of genre. If we came to the page as writers saying, well, my goal is to write something that is strictly speaking sci-fi, or I must write something that is strictly speaking historical fiction, it can kind of take some of the fun out of it. And maybe we're not coming to the page then with, you know, what it is that we can tell, the story that we can tell best. And it sounds like you found this really happy medium in between a few different genres to get together a few books here that, you know, I've seen have some really great success, at least as an outside observer on Twitter and on Facebook, etc. And I think that's fantastic. We'll be back with author Glenn Quigley after this short break. A wolf shifter, a dragon shifter, a world determined to keep them apart. Coming March 2019 from author Kay Doherty and Nine Star Press, it's Hearts of Fire, book one of the Chevalier series. When dragon shifter Luca becomes ensnared in a steel trap, the last thing he expects to find is true love. But when wolf shifter Tanner McBain discovers him alone in the woods, that's exactly what he'll find. Despite social norms and widespread prejudice, Luca and Tanner resolve to prove their bond is beyond breaking. But is it? Hearts of Fire is now available at 9starpress.com and in ebook from most major ebook retailers. For more, visit kdohertybooks.com. That's kdohertybooks.com. And we're back with author Glenn Quigley. But one thing, that I think is really interesting to follow up on here is we're talking about, you know, this sort of historical fantasy, but we're still talking about something that's historical. And in that, you know, you've talked about BBC documentaries, but let's maybe elaborate and talk more about the research that you did or have done or continue to do to bring this sort of historical period to life in your fiction. Do you do a lot of that research in advance, or is it an ongoing process? Why don't you tell listeners a little bit what that's like?
It's definitely an ongoing process. As I said, I mean, the documentaries are great for giving it, you know, the initial spark of inspiration and then a kind of general flavor for an era or a particular setting. But then you have to kind of go further into it. You have to research what it was actually like, you know, what the people were like, what they wore, what they did. I mean, I think when it comes to writing, you have to kind of get bogged down in the details a little bit, at least at the research stage. You know, you have to know, you just have to know the details about the world. Otherwise, it comes across as, oh, look, I just saw a nice photograph from the era and I just saw the whole story. You really do have to get right in there. But I think the thing I found was when I was writing, you know, your first draft kind of mold where you're just letting the ideas come out and you're just typing. And, you know, characters are doing things and they're saying things and they're, and suddenly you think, oh, hang on a minute, did they wear, you know, those kind of boots? Did they have shoelaces? Did they have, you know, buttons of that shape back then? You know, it suddenly becomes, you start to second guess everything that you've written. Because you think, well, hang on, none of this existed back then. This is all surprisingly modern. And I think that's what you finally go, oh, they actually, oh, no, that did exist back then. But this other thing I thought was hundreds and hundreds of years old, that only came around in the, you know, the 1900s or the early 20th century. You know, it's surprising. And you do what you have to constantly check. If there's even the slightest little question mark in your head over a detail or over something you've written, you have to go back and you have to check to see if it'll fit in some way with the era that you're writing.
And I'm really curious, too, as you're writing, for example, if there's a detail that you throw on the page that you're a little suspicious of, like you're worried that it might be a little anachronistic, what is your strategy for making sure that you maintain accuracy in the final draft? Do you stop what you're doing? Do you stop writing and sort of explore it in the moment? Or do you kind of highlight it, flag it, come back to it later? What's your strategy like for that?
If I'm in full flow, you know, and everything's coming great, I'll make a little note that I need to come back and check. But generally speaking, I kind of can't mentally get past it. If I think it might be wrong, I kind of stop myself and go, no, look, I'm just going to take 5 or 10 minutes out. And I'm going to go on the internet and check and see if it works. I mean, the thing with it being, with my books being more slightly fantastical, meant I was able to kind of finesse it a bit here and there and kind of go, well, look, obviously this wouldn't have really happened, but within the world it built, it makes sense. And I think that's it. If you can make it historically accurate, fine. If you can make it fit the world that you've built, fine. And if you can't, you just know it's wrong. So you have to take it out.
Yeah, and you mentioned sort of finessing some of these details, because as we've covered, you know, this is more in a historical fantasy type setting. So you have the opportunity to kind of play with historical fact a little bit. I'm curious to know, what liberties do you take when it comes to writing within this time period, and why do you choose to take those particular liberties?
Well, I took massive liberty, really.
Right.
Well, I knew the two things I knew when I was writing was it was definitely going to be in the past, and it was definitely going to feature LGBT characters. And I also knew I absolutely was not going to write about, you know, gay characters going about in secret, or, you know, there aren't being any kind of prejudice or any kind of stuff like that. So what I had to do was I had to work out a way for my world to make sense that these characters could be openly gay, openly lesbian, they could be married, they could, you know, they were just like everybody else in that respect. You know, women were equal to men, all, you know, basically quite a utopian sort of view of the past, you know, to a good extent. So the way that I worked it was, basically, I thought, well, if you've no religion colouring, you know, people's opinions for hundreds and hundreds of years, you kind of just have people being people. And I thought that was quite a nice idea. So I played a bit with, you know, time periods and changing bits here and there. And I eventually settled on the idea that once the Roman invasion hit Britain, that basically gave me all of the names, all, you know, roads, place names, people names, all the kind of stuff I needed it to be recognisably the 1780s from our world. But I said that once the Roman Empire went, religion kind of went with it. It took down the church, and people started to become sort of freer and realize actually this is a better way to live. And that idea spread through trade routes and spread out throughout the world. But that's all background stuff. I mean, that it's not the focus of the story. It was in my head. It was how I got from A to B to C to make this world sort of cohesive and to make sense. So it's like, it's a huge liberty to take. And I think as a science fiction fan myself, I found in the early days, I'd seen too many programs about time travel and how you change one little thing and the butterfly effect changes everything else. So I had to kind of say, no, look, I want it to look like the 1780s. I want it to look like the 18th century that I know, but I just needed to change some elements in the background to make it make sense. And it's only really in the second book that that sort of history gets mentioned, and it's only very briefly touched upon. And it's not, as I said, it doesn't become the focus of the story at all.
We'll be back in a moment with author Glenn Quigley. Hey, RightsCast listener, this is your host, R.R. Campbell. Wanted to take a moment to talk to you about a wonderful opportunity that I am opening up to you and other listeners and creatives who tune in to this programming. And that opportunity is this. You can now advertise on the R.R. Campbell RightsCast and other RightsCast Network shows for less than $1 a month. You've heard that right. You can get your book, your creative endeavor, your editing service, your writing-related event, whatever the case might be, you can have hundreds of new listeners hear about this product, hear about this book, hear about this service every month. All you have to do to learn more about this is head to rightscast.net/advertise. We can have a dialogue about getting an ad together that's going to work well for you, whether it's 30 seconds, a minute and a half. We can develop copy together. You can create copy of your own. I can read it, or I can write some copy for you. Whatever we want to make work, just let me know. And the way that you let me know is through rightscast.net/advertise. Thanks for listening. And we return now to our R.R. Campbell RightsCast conversation with author Glenn Quigley. And I'm really glad that you bring that up as well, because, you know, first and foremost, cohesion is really important, regardless of the degree to which we present that on the page from the sort of overworld plotting. You know, you knew as you went into writing the first book, or at least at some point when you're drafting that first book, what it is you were going to change about the historical series of events and how they shape the culture that is represented in your stories. And what I really like about it too is that you mention it isn't until that second book where you sort of stitch in these little details and suggestions of what those changes were, so that folks who are maybe keeping an eye out on that, or they're just curious about the overworld perspective, can really feel more enmeshed in that. I think that's a really effective strategy, and it's also one that, you know, I'm not writing, I wouldn't say historical anything. Mine is, it's speculative fiction, it's science fiction, it's in a near-ish future on what I also have, like, a divergent timeline where there were a few events that changed around the new millennium, you know, the year 2000, and it set us off on a slightly different course, but I don't, as you seem to not, go into this long tirade about, well, this is how we got to where we are. Those details get kind of stitched in over time, and I'm really glad that you talk about it from the perspective of making sure that it creates a cohesive world, but also that we're not interrupting the narrative to just dump on readers like, hey, here are all the things that I've changed, because that can certainly be intrusive and get in the way of the flow of the story overall. So was that a deliberate choice to kind of wait until book two to stitch in some of that, or was it just where it felt best fit?
No, it was just where it felt best. As I said, it was never going to be the focus. So I think when you've got that kind of detail built up in your head, you kind of want to reference it because it explains so much. But, you know, you don't want to drop it in as if it's going to become a big story thing later. Like, you don't want somebody reading, you know, chapter one going, oh, well, this stuff happened, so obviously this is going to come back and be relevant right by the end.
Yep.
Because it isn't. It's literally just, in case you were wondering, here's why this world is the way it is. Now, here's the actual story.
Very good. Yeah, so, I think that that's a really wonderful way to do it. And of course, over the course of stitching that sort of thing in and developing this world and making sure that it has this cohesive feel to it, you know, you have all this research going on this side. And I'm curious to know, is there a particular exciting or unusual fact that you've uncovered while researching? And then how have you incorporated that into your work, if at all?
There actually is, but I can't really get into it because it's kind of a spoiler for the second book. All I can say is I've used moths in both books, just like a little motif, just running through it every now and then. A moth will flutter by, and it's just because the first book is called The Moth and Moon, so it's built you know, it's built into the fabric of the world. So I needed, for the second book, I needed a particular, we call it a medical procedure. And I wasn't sure if that medical procedure existed back then, which is what I was talking about before, where you kind of second guess everything. I thought it was a bit of a long shot, to be honest. I thought it was, but maybe pushing it, there's just no way it would happen. I went in researching it, I checked out the history of it, and it turned out around that time, the medical procedure was first practiced, and the doctor who developed it by practicing on moths.
Wow. thought,
well, that has to be a good sign.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, so I thought, oh, great, well, I'll put that in.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's amazing. I think that really demonstrates as well the value in being precise and really focusing on details that might not seem to be especially important. I mean, you talk about the moths and how they, you know, create this sort of motif for your book. You mentioned earlier things like buttons, you know, did they have this shape or that shape of button at the time? And if we are writing historical fiction or writing any kind of fiction and we sort of skirt those smaller details, it wouldn't open up these really awesome opportunities where suddenly you find something like this where, oh my goodness, there's this medical procedure. It was practiced on moths. I've got moths. There's this recurring motif. And you can create this really, again, it's just part of the cohesion to the narrative. And it demonstrates further the importance of those smaller details, whether you're doing research or just trying to include them in your speculative world in the first place.
Yeah. Plus, it makes it look like you planned it the whole time.
Right, exactly. It's nice when things work out as through coincidence sometimes, you know? It's those happy accidents that we get to preside over as authors from time to time. Well, very good. We've covered a lot of ground here, you know? We've kind of fleshed out the difference between historical fiction and historical fantasy. We've talked about the research that you put into this, the process that it forms part of, and then, of course, you know, this fun, interesting fact about moths and medical procedures here as well. But I'm curious to know, why don't we talk about what's next for Glenn Quigley? Where can listeners find you and your books online? And feel free to share a little bit more freely about what these books cover with listeners to the show.
Well, you can find me on my website. It's glennquigley.com. That's Glenn with two N's. You can find me on Twitter, which is at Glenn Quigley. Again, Glenn with two N's. You can find all the details about books there. You can also find some of my design work. I design bear t-shirts for a company called themoodybear.com. You can find lots of stuff on there. At the moment, I have just started what I hope will become book three in the series. Each book is designed to sort of stand alone, but they kind of build on one another. During writing, the second book, I had lots and lots of ideas that never made it into it, so I'm kind of spinning them off into their own story. So I'm hoping that will come together nicely. I've also got in the works a fairy tale from the world of my books, because one day I kind of sat down and I thought, well, if LGBT people and, you know, there's been equality for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, then the folklore will have changed along with it. So I thought, well, what would a fairy tale from that world look like? And then the second book, one of the main characters mentions that her favorite story is a fairy tale, so I've actually written that fairy tale. So I'm hoping to do something with that at some point. As well as I've a folder full of other ideas. So you can find all that on my website as
well. Well, that's wonderful. It sounds like you've got a lot going on, and that's the beauty of writing in a speculative world, whether we're doing it in historical fiction / historical fantasy, whether we're doing it in science fiction or high fantasy. Opens up a lot of wonderful opportunities, and I'm looking forward to continuing to follow all the books that you put out, as well as some of these short stories. So, folks, I want to thank you for joining us for this episode. I want to thank Glenn for being part of it. And again, you can find The Moth and the Moon through Nine Star Press and everywhere that Glenn has mentioned earlier in our conversation. So, again, thank you, Glenn, for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Ryan.
And so concludes my R.R. Campbell WritesCast interview of Glenn Quigley, author of The Moth and the Moon and The Lion Lies Waiting. For more from Glenn, you can visit glennquigley.com. Thanks to Glenn for being on the show, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. I'd also like to thank the WritesCast Network's patrons at patreon.com/WritesCast, where their support of our programming in the form of financial contributions of $1, $2, or $3 per episode are of great aid in helping us become self-sustaining. I'd like to thank Kristen Oakley most of all, whose support at that highest level is truly remarkable. So thank you, Kristen. If you'd like to get wonderful patron rewards, including discounts on editing services, RightsCast swag, and extra votes in listeners' choice polls, start contributing at even just $1 per month today over at patreon.com/rightscast. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Coming up next on the RightsCast Network is an episode of Novel Approaches featuring yours truly and fellow co-host Sione Ashleman. To learn more about the topic we'll be covering over the course of our hour-plus deep dive into the craft of writing, you can visit rightscast.net/blog. That's rightscast.net/blog. That's all for this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast. Until we return in a week's time with that new Novel Approaches episode, you can find us online at rightscast.net and as RightsCast on Twitter. Or, if you'd like to contact me directly, I'm on Twitter as IamRRCampbell, and my author site is rrcampbellwrites.com. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on, and write well.
This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net.